out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 31st of January, the last day of the month of January 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. As it's Wednesday, we have Billy Roper here with us from the Roper Report and the Shield Wall Network. How are you doing today, Billy?
I'm doing fine, Sven. Thanks for having me again.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I do look forward to the Wednesday podcast. We always have quite a laugh, and I know you've put a fair bit of work into content that you've got prepared for today. I know that you were watching President Trump's State of the Union address yesterday. Now, I've seen some highlights from that, and I've read a bit about what went on, but I haven't actually seen the whole speech. So I'm hoping you're going to be able to give us a bit of a rundown of what went on and what are your thoughts about it so that we can have a bit of a discussion about it for the listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a labor of love, but it was one of those painful, arduous things that you don't really enjoy. It was actually a bit painful to watch because, you know, if you could imagine yourself being a cancer patient, you've been diagnosed with having terminal cancer, you have a tumor somewhere in your abdomen the size of a fist, and it's metastasizing. And if your doctor told you, you know, you could actually go under the knife, you could have surgery to surgically remove this tumor, and then you could have radiation treatment, and then you could have chemotherapy, which would be very weakening and debilitating, it would make you sick, or you could just once every 4 years drink a milkshake, and you could actually choose to have a chocolate milkshake or a vanilla milkshake, and you'll be fine. You know, obviously, most people would take the easy way out, people being generally weak and cowardly and not wanting to take a difficult choice that will take the easy way out every time, and so they take the milkshake option. Well, electoral politics and civic nationalism is the milkshake option. When you get that long face from the doctor that you have terminal cancer, as I believe our body politic does, and the doctor offers you, rather than chemotherapy or radiation or surgery, you could just take a milkshake and your choice of flavors once every 4 years with every election, even though they both taste exactly the same. That's basically what Donald Trump and civic nationalism offers to conservatives and to even some right-wing and white nationalist people who don't want to face the fact that we're not going to be able to vote our way out of the situation. We're not going to solve this problem that we're facing at the ballot box. While I do appreciate the polarization and the division, that is happening organically. And last night, he did not forward the balkanization of America. He actually tried to create what would have been a unifying speech. And by that measure, it was successful. If I were just a Republican, I'd be very pleased by the speech. 75% of people overall in last night's poll following the State of the Union address were positively impacted by it. 43% of Democrats, 91% of Republicans love the speech. And so it was very patriotic, very unifying as he intended it to be. But there was still a lot of rancor, a lot of division. Obviously, the right and left sides of the congressional hall, which goes back to the French Revolution, where you have right wing versus left wing emerging as phrases of conservative versus liberal, were very divided. The Democrats over the left side scowled and frowned and did not applaud, while the Republicans on the right side would stand and applaud. And so he trucked out these dog and pony shows with these patriots, these little kids. And he actually did a good job by bringing in two black couples who had both lost daughters the same night, killed by six MS-13 illegal immigrant teenagers who were eligible for DACA. And so he was able to take a swipe against DACA dreamers by using a non-racial, using black victims format. And then he said, Americans are dreamers too, which was a good civic nationalist message. But overall, he's preaching to his base, and his base needs to be alienated from the electoral process and from the government. But the only people who seem to be alienated are those people in the far left who are perhaps a little bit more extreme than the far right and more willing to accept that we're not going to be able to sit together and hold hands and sing Kumbaya. The Ruth Bader Ginsburg, like the ostrich-looking old Jewess in the Supreme Court, did not go to the speech, and neither did actually four other Supreme Court justices. Four of them did, so the majority did not of the Supreme Court. Incidentally, there are five Jewish members of the U.S. Supreme Court, got a very heavy influence there. And, of course, the Democrats did not really enjoy the speech, and neither did I, but for different reasons.
Yeah, I heard that the Democrats didn't like it, and that he seemed to be trying to unify people together. But do you think that when he tries to unify everyone together and says, "Oh, we're all Americans," and tries to bring blacks in with the whites, then you think that that really irritates the Democrats, and they just get even more annoyed at him, and the far left get even more annoyed at him because they see him as a Nazi and a fascist. And they think that when he says that, he's just trolling them because they don't seem to pay any attention to it. And, you know, he says these things like he says he wants to bring everyone together. But at the same time, he does want to stop immigration and put a wall up. So and I've seen him say things about how friendly he is with Theresa May and how he supports everything that she does. And then he'll go and retweet Britain First with anti-Islamic terror tweets. And he won't back down on that. They've tried to say that he's apologized for it on an interview he gave on British television recently. But he didn't actually apologize for it. He said, "Oh, if they're really nasty people, I don't know that they are. But if they are, and it's what you're telling me, then of course I would apologize." And that was about as close as it came. But it seems to me that he's trolling the left. Don't you think? And they just get even more wound up when he tries to be friendly.
It could be, and we certainly want them to be as trolled as they possibly can be, but it also has the negative effect of leaving his base, leaving conservatives and white nationalists very unsure about what, if anything, he truly believes and what his true motivations are and where his true loyalties lie. He did make actually a 4-point announcement about immigration, which is what most people were listening for. That was actually the meat of his 1 hour and 20-minute long speech. And the first point of that was to say that he led into it by saying that there was the lowest black unemployment rate in U.S. history. So the black congressman just sat there with their frowns and their folded arms. And the same thing about Hispanics, the Hispanic congressman. Actually, it was interesting how the controlled media did this last night, Sven. When he made the comment saying that blacks had the lowest unemployment rate in American history, the cameraman zoomed in to the Congressional Black Caucus. When he made the comment about Hispanics having the lowest unemployment rate in American history, they zoomed in on Latino congressmen. And when he made the remark that he was the first president to recognize Jerusalem as being the capital of Israel, the cameraman zoomed into Jared Kushner and held it for several seconds. So I thought that was quite telling. But he talked about tax reform and his job increase plan and killing the individual mandate of Obamacare and cutting business tax rates and small business growth that happened. But what he said really about immigration is that the 4 points were, number one, he would give a pathway to citizenship over a 12-year period to 1.8 million currently illegal immigrant DACA kids, or, you know, they're young adults now. 1.8 million at this point, but of course more would be eligible as time goes forward. And some people have said as many as 3.6 million and more are going to be coming because they know that's a possibility in the near future. He said that there would be border security, and he actually did use the word wall, and that they would hire more ICE agents, and he used a Latino ICE agent who was there in the audience that he tried out as an example of the kind of heroic leadership that they wanted to have on the border there. He said that he would end the diversity visa lottery, and fourth, that he would end chain migration. Now, this was maybe the most contentious moment, because what he actually said was that under the current system, one immigrant can bring in a virtually unlimited number of family members. And there was so much booing and hissing and murmuring and griping going on that was audible for several seconds that I actually thought that I was listening to you guys in the British Parliament there for a few minutes.
Yeah, I tell you, it's an embarrassment, the British Parliament, or the noise they make. It sounds like a farmyard. But I did hear one of the TV companies actually has admitted to turning up the booing and the hissing.
Oh.
To distort it.
To make it sound worse.
Yeah, yeah. And turning it down when the cheers were there. Don't you find it racist? It's racist against white people that we have a black caucus and a Latino caucus. So, well, where's the white caucus then? Where's the people speaking up for whites?
It's not allowed. Now, the founders of the Congressional Black Caucus did boycott the event. And one of the Hispanic congressmen actually got up in the middle of the speech and walked out and then publicly said that Trump was being openly racist. So one of the good things is that those who are reading between the lines and paying attention of the news coverage of last night's speech should be able to tell. Once again, they've been verified that no matter how much you cuck, no matter how much you pull out a Latino hero and hold him up as a shining example of Americanism, no matter how many million of these DACA dreamers you make into citizens through virtual amnesty, they're not going to be satisfied. They're not going to be content. So that is good. But what I would have preferred to see personally is a more divisive speech. I'm not interested in building a broad coalition. I'm not interested in passing positive legislation. I'm not interested in border control, because building a fence or even a wall here, demographically, you know, the difference between Democrats and Republicans is that Democrats want to replace whites and make us a minority through illegal immigration. Republicans want to replace whites and make us a minority through legal immigration. Now, the end result is the same, even if there's maybe a decade or two difference before the bottom line is reached. So that's why I want more polarization and more division and less unity, especially on the right. And this morning when I was listening to some of the other podcasts and some of the other talk shows, when these people who have, you know, I was never on the Trump train. I was never a Donald Trump supporter. I never wore a red hat. And one of the hardest things, as you can certainly attest to, Sven, is one of the hardest things about being smarter than the average bear is that you're not very often surprised. And I knew that this was coming, but there are so many people who thought that he was going to be the great white hope and going to be our savior and wore their MAGA hats. And they would go back and forth. They vacillate. They'll be disgusted by us talking about amnesty one day and the DACA deal. And then they'll go back. He makes one little remark and he's been their savior again. So it was disgusting to me. And it's very disappointing. But once again, you know, you and I have been this a long time. We know human nature. And like I said, people always want to try to find the easiest way out and not make those hard decisions. So if they think there's any way that Trump could be the savior and could forestall the inevitable, they'll take that. I always believe that Nietzsche was right when he said that, to paraphrase, a multiracial democracy cannot fly. And what cannot fly must fall. So what is falling, then we should still push and say fall faster.
Yeah, I mean, we have to go with the flow, really. You can't really stand up against the tide. And I can say that it has been a major disappointment not to see steps being put in place to get that wall built. I mean, that was the main part of his campaign, was the fact he was going to build this wall. And he's been going for a year now, and he still hasn't been able to even start on that wall. And it appears to me that he's offering to compromise on these dreamers is so that he can maybe get started on this wall. But you say he mentioned the wall yesterday, but what did he say about it? Did he say anything concrete about it? Did he say when it was going to start, when it was going to start building, when the foundations were going to be laid, anything like that?
Not at all. He did use the adjective great. He called it the Great Wall. So I don't know if he was talking about China or us, you know, but he did actually refer to it as the Great Wall and said there would be tremendous border security. He said it'd be fabulous. It'd be the best ever. It'd be wonderful. It'd be great. But aside from saying that it'd be great, no, nothing at all concrete or even wood planks, to be honest with you, as far as building material or foundations or how long it would be, if he was going to literally make a wall or if he's going to repair some fence and hire some more ICE agents and call it good and declare victory. I don't think that many of the most right-wing people, even those who are formerly Trump supporters or who would like to still be Trump supporters, actually believe at this point that we're actually going to have a border wall. It's pretty obvious that that was campaign rhetoric, and he has no intention of actually following through with that. And they're just going to try to make a couple of gestures in that direction. And basically, if you look at the budget deal that the Democrats voted against for the very brief government shutdown, the Democrats got everything they wanted. They got DACA. They did not have to put any money forward right now to build a wall. It's all in the planning stages in hypothetical. So they have pretty much won. Schumer's pretty much, even though he's the minority leader, in control of the Senate, because even the Republicans failed to do what they need to do, what they can do just by their own Senate rules to take back control of both houses of Congress. And so, you know, I honestly cannot take this Tweedledum and Tweedledumber flip sides of the same coin approach to government very seriously. And that's why I don't put my hopes in the ballot box. Some people, unfortunately, still do. And I don't know. You know, it's kind of like an abused wife. How many times she's going to have to get slapped around before she realizes that this is not a good system. It's not working out for her. She keeps going back to the same old guy, just like people keep going back to the ballot box every 4 years, hoping for a different outcome. And that's really, you know, the definition of psychopathy. If you do the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome. But the American people seem to be all lazy psychopaths.
Well, I don't think we're going to find salvation in the ballot box. I don't think we're going to get success in that way. But we can make life a little bit better for ourselves. And I do see it that Trump has made life better for white Americans than it would have been if Hillary Clinton got him. And if you compare what Donald Trump is like to Theresa May and Amber Rudd over here, where they're saying nationalists are terrorists, if you're putting stickers up, then you're preparing for terrorist acts. And over there in America, you've got Donald Trump saying, well, I'm going to cut all funding for subversion of white nationalist organizations. We need to direct that money towards Islamic terrorists. Why are we investigating white nationalist organizations? So even though he is not doing everything that we would wish somebody would do in that position, he is still making life a little bit better for us. I don't tend to go along with the, you know, the worse it gets, the better it is because more people join us, because it's been getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse for the last 70 years. And nationalism has been getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And now nationalism is rising again. And a lot of that was galvanized through the Donald Trump campaign and trying to make it out to seem as if it was far more racist and nationalist than it actually was, in order to get the left to show their true colors in fighting against him. And then when you've got people that are just normie types that don't know much about this, what they then see is the insane left being incredibly violent and calling them racists. And they think, well, I'm not a racist. I support Donald Trump. He's got normal policies. They're not racist policies. These extreme left, they're completely insane. And that was more the point of that, I think. Only some people did fall for it and think that Donald Trump was really going to do all these things. He was going to set up these right-wing death squads as soon as he got into power. And of course, he hasn't. But he has made life a little bit better for nationalists, I think. But I think one of the main problems that you've got over there in America is all these immigrants. So if he's saying, well, we're going to talk about allowing these 1.5 million DACA dreamers allowed to stay, what about the other 30 million that are there? What about all the illegal ones, the ones that didn't come in on under Obama's dreamer thing? What about the ones that didn't come in there on the diversity lottery? All the illegal ones, they need to be sent back. That's just as important as building the wall to stop any more coming in, is to get rid of the ones that are there. You know, I heard this week that there was some lad, and he did the right thing. He called ICE up about one of the kids that were at his school that couldn't speak English and was there illegally, and he's been expelled from the school. And all he did was report an illegal immigrant. I mean, everything seems to be, the whole establishment there seems to be pushing to replace white people. And at least you've got somebody there that says, well, I do want to stop immigration. I just want to have legal immigration, which is better than, you know, Hillary Clinton or all these Democrats being in there, I think, Billy.
Well, nothing at all has been said, as you point out, about the, I guess, 20 million or 25. We don't even know how many illegal immigrants there are in the United States right now. And that's sad when you have a nation of 330 million people and there are 20 million of them who literally are not supposed to be there, who invaded, who broke the law in order to just waddle across the border. And that's a problem of birthright citizenship. That's a problem of our culture and policies of the government. But it's also a failure of the will of the American people, because, well, we would not have gotten in this situation if one generation after another had not incrementally cut leftwards and allowed it to happen. So, question of the frog in the boiling pot of water. I am of the belief, however, that it will require complete system collapse, whether externally or internally, for us to regain control over our own destiny as a people. And so, I frankly believe that whatever polarizes and alienates people from the government, whatever polarizes and divides them from one another, is actually going to be in our best interest in the long term. And so I don't like people being contented with the status quo and feeling like a little bit of improvement is enough when it's just really delaying the inevitable death of white America. So I'd rather see things break off completely sooner rather than later, because when that happens, when the balkanization occurs, if it's sooner rather than later, more of our people will live, will survive, and we'll hold on to more territory with our white ethnostate.
Well, we have to do all we can to keep pushing things. You know, we can't sit on our laurels. I think this has been one of the problems. People think, well, Donald Trump's in, that's it, he's going to sort it out. Well, he hasn't sorted it out, and we've still got a long way to go. And things are a lot worse over here in Britain. But in some ways, there are parallels to it. I mean, we've got Brexit that's supposed to be happening within the next 2 years. And everybody voted for Brexit in the same way that everybody voted for Donald Trump, because they wanted the wall, they wanted to stop immigration. Well, over here, we had 17 million people that voted for Brexit because they wanted to stop immigration. And now they're talking about watering it all down, keeping the EU laws, allowing all the people that are here to stay here, continuing the immigration once it's done. And all it's going to be is leaving the European Union in name only. I mean, is this race replacement levels of immigration which is doing the damage? And they say that we need these people for the economy, but all they are is a drain on the economy. A massive drain on the economy. When you think they've got to be housed, they've got to be educated, they've got a free health service over here as well, which is just creaking at the seams and just falling apart completely. They're actually saying we've got a hospital crisis over here in Britain. But nobody in the establishment draws a link between this mass immigration that we've had in the last 20 years and all of our services falling apart. And this is what's happening in America as well. I know Donald Trump is talking about these big infrastructure projects. Well, that's good. And hopefully it's going to get employment for the American people. But surely a lot of the reason why the infrastructure is worn out is because you've just got far too many people over there, people that haven't paid into it. And I would say that he's saying about how he's raised jobs and how he's got more of the unemployed back to work, more blacks back to work, more Latinos back to work. But none of them appear to be happy about this, you know, which proves what you were saying about no matter what he does, they will not be happy. They will not be happy. You can cuck as much as you like, and the enemy is just going to demand that you prostrate yourself all the more, because they hate us and they want to replace us. And they're being aided by white traitors and Jews in order to do that on both sides of the pond, over there in America and over here in Britain. It's just that I do see it as being slightly better conditions for you over there because he's got in. And he is still a focal point for things. And he does still do some good things, like when he retweeted those Britain First tweets. I mean, that was absolutely priceless over here. Major news that he had done that, and they were saying we've got to ban him from the country, we can't allow him to come in, we can't allow him to visit the Queen, he should be arrested for hate speech, all this nonsense. And I say it was absolutely priceless to watch them completely flipping out over that. And yet when you go out and about and you talk to people, everyone was saying, well, I don't understand what the fuss is about. How can they say this is fake news or unverified? Were they not really throwing somebody off the building there? You know, were they not? Was that not right. Really not a Muslim punching up this Dutch white guy? I mean, it was facts, basically. That's what he was showing. And the general public are right behind him in Britain. I mean, I don't know what it's like in London because I don't live in London. But outside of the cities, everyone thinks he's great. You know, he's like a focal point for us. But over there, you know, you just wish he would be that much better. And I guess it's the same with Putin. You know, you talk to a lot of people in Russia and they're like, well, Putin just isn't good enough. You know, you all think he's great, but he's just not good enough. And I've heard the same from people in Hungary with Viktor Orban, who say, he's just not good enough. He's terrible. He's doing this, that and the other. And yet from the other side, where we've got Theresa May and Amber Rudd, Viktor Orban looks like Adolf Hitler to us. You know, amazing. It's just the way it is.
The grass is always greener on the other side of the fence, right? And you're absolutely definitely right also about the fact that they'll never be satisfied. You know, like I said, whenever he was making the announcement that blacks had the lowest unemployment rate right now as they ever have in American history, and they focused on the black congressman, they were all frowning and looking down like they're very angry about that fact, you know, and Latino unemployment, the lowest rate in American history. Latino congressmen were walking out saying that he was racist because he talked about MS-13 and illegal immigrants committing crimes. And they were not satisfied. They'll never be satisfied. But I think that's because the reason why conservatives don't understand that, because they do what's called psychologically a reflection, because a nationalist is someone who wants to save their race, and a conservative is someone who wants to save their money. And they reflect those values of wanting to save their money and thinking only about their economic interest onto their enemies, onto other races. And so some conservatives might think that if blacks are given jobs and they're okay, you know, there's enough steaks in the freezer, then they will like us and love us again, when really other races have already caught on the fact that it's identity politics that rules the day, and they vote racially consistently over and over again, even growingly, increasingly. But conservatives reflect their own psychological values of valuing their bottom line and how much money is in their 401k, rather than whether their grandkids are going to be a minority or not. And that's, I guess, part of the boomer mentality. But when conservatives reflect those values onto non-whites, they really make a serious error. I think that might have been one of the errors that conservatives in Congress make, if they are given the credit, if they are perhaps given the benefit of doubt of thinking they're sincere. Then they're making that mistake in thinking that non-whites value, they can be bought off as easily as whites can, and probably they cannot.
Well, I think that's, you know, you've got a good point there. It's projection. I mean, we suffer from it in nationalism as well. People will project their values onto other races and nations and think, well, they must care about their race. So if we do something for their race and encourage them to be nationalists as well, they'll want to join us. Well, no, they won't. They're just out for themselves. If it benefits them to appear to have solidarity with their race, like Black Lives Matter, then they'll do that. But if you look at the Negroes out in Africa, you can't really say that they're nationalists. They don't have any loyalty to one another. This projection is something that white people really suffer from, I think. We look at the way that we behave and we assume that the other races are going to behave in the same way. We assume that they're going to have the same sense of justice and the same sense of mercy and charity and fair play that we have, which they just don't have. I mean, they're not going to react to Trump in and say, well, fair play to him, he's got us lots of jobs. They're just going to say, we want more. We want free entry into the universities. We want to get an extra half an hour on the exams, the entrance exams that we do. We want to be guaranteed that a certain percentage of blacks are going to be in the government. Do you know what I mean? They will never be satisfied. And it's because we project our values onto them when there's no actual evidence to show that they have ever held those values, especially not blacks.
Not at all. And I guess a white pill to take away from this, a positive thing, because I don't want to be, you know, pessimistic or defeatist. I want to actually be encouraging, uplifting. What I would like to leave people with, as far as our takeaway from the State of the Union address, is that this shows that there are a lot of white people who are becoming more and more politically conscious, and that political consciousness actually can be easily transferred into racial consciousness. So what I encourage you to do is to not just sit back and be observers of history as it passes you by. We're really in very interesting times. So go to Tea Party meetings, go to your local Republican meetings on the city and the county level, and spend some time getting to know the people there. Listen for those and talk to them who are most radical, most right wing, and many of them you'll find can be cherry picked, so that you can actually find many like-minded people who just did not have anywhere else to go, who are going to what they think is the most right-wing collective there. So I encourage you to actually be activist in real life, to get out from behind your keyboards and to meet relatively like-minded people that can be cherry-picked and can be radicalized by your example and led along rightwards through that Hegelian dialectic shift towards white nationalism, away from conservatism. There's a great opportunity now, and Trump is one of the reasons for it. So that's a white pill for the day. That's something very optimistic that we can move on and take action on.
Definitely. Get out there and take part. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Billy. I'll be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. So thank you very much for listening. God bless, and hail victory.